We certainly would not have survived as a species if we hadn't migrated out of East Africa. We know that. Historically, we almost died out, and it was only migration that kept us going.
Ian Golding is economist and director of the Oxford Martin School. In the next 15 minutes, he talks about the problems and possibilities of migration. Welcome to Backlight Talks.
I think the most important misunderstanding about migration is that how it's somehow other people, that we're not all migrants. And that the whole world has established itself. Our civilizations, the great places like Amsterdam, are the result of migration. Yeah. This has always been historically the fact. In fact, we have lower levels of migration now than at many times in history, as a share of our populations. And we have more control now. Europe is a bit of an exception because of Schengen and the new visa structure, but coming into Europe, is much more controlled than 100 years ago, when passports barely existed. So passports are a very new phenomena. So one myth, I think, is somehow that migration is other people, it doesn't concern us, that they're migrants, we're not migrants. That is a big myth. The second big myth, I think, is that migrants take more than they give from society. All the evidence shows that migrants and migration contribute much more than they take, on average. And this is both for skilled and unskilled migrants. It's true in simply economic terms, so what they contribute to the economy in indirect or direct taxes, in economic production of goods and services, and also what they take in terms of maybe social security is lower than their aggregate contributions. But more importantly, if one goes from the static period to the dynamic, then one sees that migrants are the source of economic dynamism. And all the great leaps in economic progress, as I show in my book, have resulted from migrants coming. They're the risk takers, they're the innovators. Diversity is good for innovation and for management in general, we now understand. We just think it's only women in the workplace, that's a big innovation. But actually different types of people with different perspectives helps dynamism. And we see this most acutely in Silicon Valley. You know, half of the Silicon Valley startups, all the great iconic firms we can think of, the Googles, the Yahoos, Apples, are the result of very recent migrations. Half the patents in the US. And if you think of people in the arts, Academy Award winners, Nobel Prize winners in academia, the share of these people in relation to migration is 3, 4, 5 times what you would expect from just the distribution in the population of migrants. So we know these people contribute ideas, they contribute investment, they contribute innovation, and we know our societies would be much more static and not as sustainable in terms of growth without them. So that's the second great myth, I think, that they take rather than give, and they're somehow bad for us as opposed to good for us. I think the third great myth is that basically we're going to be overwhelmed by poor people coming from the rest of the world that will threaten our way of life. Migrants are, the really smart people in society. They're the people who are explorers, who are innovators, who are risk takers. Often, the migrants represent the family or community. So it's often the oldest son, or in the case of the Philippines, the oldest daughter that will migrate to support their whole family. So the decisions they take are not only based on their own information, they're also based on the family research and also community. So once one or a number of migrants go, you create a chain migration where they send back information, say, hey, there are lots of jobs here, I found somewhere nice to stay, the people are quite friendly, you get more coming. So chains are very important, and that's why when you go around and take taxis, as I do, in different cities in the US, or I think the same will be happening in Europe, you meet people, and in that city, they're all from the same place, in parts of Middle East, you know, Dubai, you suddenly, all the taxi drivers are from Kerala State. And there's this chain effect. So the interesting thing is, how do the first ones get there and establish this chain? What's the information around it? The internet has greatly facilitated this. It's not like my grandfather, you know, who didn't know where he was going when he ended up in Cape Town. They thought they were going to Buenos Aires. And they could not communicate with anyone back home. It's a very different world of information, of possibility, and of course mobile phones. You know, people are safe, you can help each other, etc. The risks have also gone down, information's gone up in this. It's a very strange thing for an economist who started up learning the works of John Stuart Mill and Adam Smith and these people, because when you read these people that many of the neoclassical, more liberal economists now regard as their high priests, they talk absolutely about free movement of labor as being essential for their concepts of economic freedom. That distinction comes much later. And it's really at the time of the First World War when passports become systematized. Even after the First World War, and there's quotes in my book on this, you have leading politicians in Europe, in the US, in Britain, saying that this is completely crazy that we're stopping people coming. So it's a recent phenomena, and it's getting worse, not better. And the technologies, in some respects, are making it worse. So retina scans, fingerprints, you know, it's getting harder and harder to be in a society illegally. And everyone is known, the surveillance systems, etc., now are improving. So it's very difficult for people to be in a society. 100 years ago, no one would know what your name was. You could just print another document or something. Yeah. And there's some great novels, including some I cite in the book, which show the shock of people when they first asked for a passport. So economics has moved to a situation where many of the liberal economists, including great liberal politicians in Britain, in Europe, in the US, push for more and more free market in trades of goods and services and capital. But tighter and tighter controls over labor. There's no economic explanation for this whatsoever. Okay, this is just bad economics. It's political. It's totally political. And it's because politicians are finding it very difficult to defend more open policies on migration. And I think also economists have failed to understand this. Economists are not good on behavior. They see people as sort of inanimate objects. That's a big mistake in economics, because we're psychological creatures, and behavior is extremely important. The most interesting thought experiment on free migration is Europe. Okay. And, you know, it's the only place in the world which has taken away border controls of a large number of economies. And what's amazing about it is how well it's worked, how few Europeans move inside Europe. In the economic crisis in southern Europe now, Spain has 50% youth unemployment. How many Spaniards are there looking for a job on the streets of Amsterdam? Very few. How many Greeks are there? Very few. So actually, one of the things that economists were wrong about is the assumption that people move like a good or a service. People don't move. People actually don't want to move. They want to stay at home, especially if they don't have a job, because they can stay with their parents or they can have a friend's network to look after them, except things like that. So one of the things that we've learned through the economic crisis and through Europe is, A, when you take down borders, you don't get mass migration. And B, it's very determined by the need on the economy, not the supply. Dependency ratios, which is the ratio of elderly people and young people under working age to the working population, are changing dramatically around the world. And there are two real drivers of this change. The one is that people are living longer and longer. So the average life expectancy is increasing. So longer life. The other trend is collapsing fertility. So you have less young people coming into the labor force over time. You have more old people, but there's still a lot of young people because the collapsing fertility is a very recent phenomenon. Every society is different. But in our mental maps, we have an idea of a population pyramid where there are more young people and then middle-aged people and a very small number of elderly people. Actually, we must erase that from our mental maps and put in place something that looks more like a vase. Or if you're an economist like me, you may be seen as a coffin. Okay? Lots of elderly people, very much fewer younger people, and the middle group having to pay the taxes and earn the income for these big, heavy dependents at the top. In Europe, we're going to have a big problem. Now, remember that because there's so few young people or middle-aged people relative to older people, the elderly will dominate politics. Okay? They will dominate the voting. So they will make sure that they look after themselves.
Yeah.
In terms of trying to maintain pensions and social security, etc. The retirement age will keep increasing, and I don't think we will object. We will want to keep working. We will be healthy. Our brains will be fine. And the idea of retiring for, 27 years or something, I think is an idea that none of us would really embrace. But also we won't be able to afford it. So the numbers suggest that the OECD, that's the rich country workforce, if we assume entry and exit at about the same levels as now, when people come into the labor force and when they leave it, about the same as now, goes down from about 800 million to about 600 million people over the next 35 years. It's a dramatic decline in working age population, just driven by demography. And that means a number of things. One is we'll need more migrants. But even if migrants were 10 times the current level, it still wouldn't compensate for this gap in the labor market. We'll have to work longer. And of course, our technologies will change. There will be automation. There will be other things that will substitute technology for labor. The one society that is in a very healthy position is the USA. So the USA still looks like a population pyramid, like a beehive. And that is because of migration. So half the children being born in the US today are being born to migrant parents, although they're only about 10% of the population. Hmm. So this is amongst other things, an enormous source of dynamism and optimism regarding the future of the US economy. The opposite is true in Europe. In fact, I predict that in 2030, Europe will be saying desperately, we want more Africans. We're going to need them to push us elderly people around in our wheelchairs.
Yeah.
and to do many things because the labor force in Europe is contracting dramatically. Europe's in a terrible crisis now. It's in a crisis of survival of the euro. It's in a crisis of politics, short-termism. And it's clearly got to overcome its short-term issues of debt, unemployment, etc. In that environment, it's very difficult for people to think strategically about issues like migration. When people feel a crisis or become unemployed, they naturally become more conservative. They become nationalistic. They become protectionist. They become xenophobic. They blame their problems on the other, the outsider. This is something we've always done as humans. It's not we created the problem, it's they created it. The best solution is to keep them out. Yeah. Then our problems will be solved, whether it's people or whether it's other things. goods and services, investments, etc. And we see this in Europe a lot now. I think this would be terribly self-destructive. It's short-termism. And in the medium term, everyone is the loser. But it's understandable as a political process. So my hope is that Europe transitions out of this crisis quickly. I don't think we can expect much better policies on migration during the crisis. But my hope is that we will transition out of it, that we will learn from the crisis, that actually people didn't come from Southern Europe when they were free to come, that migration isn't the threat we think it is.